Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies and the Law on the subject of the status change. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies and the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it. For sure, you'll get some entertainment. Mainly, you're just going to get folks' opinions about certain things. However experienced and thorough and thoughtful and educated as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just that, just people's opinions. Definitely not advice of any kind. And of course, it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. Look up in the upper right-hand corner. We see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First, most importantly on the left, is the jurisdictionary course. It's your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's popularly purchased for. But that's not really why we have it up here. The reason that it's up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course a couple times and then you get into the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as a real-life homework assignment. Most of the key structure, core structure that you learned about in jurisdictionary, you're now acting out in real life with the common law default. That fact coupled with, you know, that it is usually a traffic scenario. Traffic scenarios, more often than not, are usually the least strenuous, least stressful of all legal scenarios to be in. You know, what can go horribly wrong? You know, you end up with a small civil, you know, penalty or something like that. And so folks feel more comfortable with that, for that being their first time. And so we encourage you to pick both of these items up at your earliest convenience. They are very affordably priced, asking just a small contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default. All right, back to the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com. You see the little register button there underneath where we saw the picture of the Constitution. I'd like to remind everybody to set themselves up with an online account at Your Remedies in the Law at your earliest convenience. Again, very affordably priced, asking just a very small contribution of $10 a month for full membership that gives you full access to everything and anything at Your Remedies in the Law. Of course, you get the phone number and the PIN, so every call every night. You have full access to all the calls, one-on-one with the information providers, where you can virtually ask as many questions as you like. Once you've been on a couple of these calls, you'll see what that's about. We have folks that sometimes will, have a dozen questions, and we're happy to. Our information providers happy to answer them all. So you get full access there. A lot of other wonderful different features there as well. Of course, the archives as well. Can't forget the archives. Every call is recorded, so you have years going back. Members of the team, information providers that aren't even with us anymore, that you have access to as well. So just a vast wealth of knowledge there. more than worth it to bargain for that $10 a month. If that's not an option for you just yet, though, we do have Freedoms Radio, www.freedomsradio.com. Every call, every night is broadcasted out over Freedoms Radio. There's even a little question bar there where you can type in a question or comment, click submit. We read those out over the air. And so you get some kind of limited interaction with the speaker for that evening. And, of course, there's never a cost to use Freedoms Radio. So you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, changing subjects here. Most of you probably noticed on basically every website that we have, you'll see that map of the United States. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. That's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topic of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. First of all, again, it is absolutely 100% free use. Another feature there at America's Restoring America that is completely free. You've got a very easy to work with install wizard. You know, put your name in here, click next, get your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it's going to give you a long list of topics to choose from. You can pick many topics as you like, more than one topic, it's fine. These topics range anything from status change we're talking about tonight, litigation tomorrow, things of that nature, or home foreclosure, credit card matters, IRS matters, veterans rights, health rights, just on and on. If you can think of it, it's in that list. And so it's going to have you pick as many of those as you're interested in. And then it'll have you choose a radius, you know, how far away from the home are we looking to go? Are we looking for like a citywide, a countywide, statewide, or something custom in the middle maybe? And when it's all said and done, it puts it all together, probably how most folks would describe as a social media, but nothing like a social media, very custom, very private, but how most folks would probably describe that. The idea is that you jump on there one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first few people come back and they say, oh, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right. Yeah, that's probably a truthful statement, probably a very heartfelt statement, but I don't know how well that's going to help you in your path to education. But maybe the next person comes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. You seem to be struggling with these terms and what they mean and what it means to you, so I'd go down to my county courthouse, go to the law library. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library, free to the taxpayer. And I'd look up those terms. And that'll give you a much better idea of kind of what you're in for. And then I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now we're starting to get somewhere. Now we're starting to educate ourselves. Maybe the next person comes down after that and says, those sound like great ideas. I would definitely do that also. I'd check out this website. I'll say www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. Well, you see where I'm going with this. And so that's what we're trying to do here with Grass Fire Communications is very simply get folks to start talking again. Learning how to do their own due diligence. And once you get to that point where you're doing your own due diligence and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters, well, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's the point of Grass Fire Communications. All right. Most of you probably notice now every time you visit the homepage of your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on with your remedy, if you want to check out Americans Restoring America. The reason we're doing this is very simple, is we're trying to get folks to explore. All too often we hear, I wish I'd known about this, or I wish I'd heard about that. And so that's why we've put that little box there. A lot of folks don't realize how big your remedy has become, how large the team has become on all the different topics that there are. And then all of your remedies in the law, everything that encompasses that, your remedies in the law is just one of a dozen and a half websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So for the vast majority of you, there's still so much that you haven't even seen yet. And so we're trying to get folks to explore, so we encourage you to do that as well. All right. Of course, if you have a question on whether we have a information provider, a member of the team that can assist you with your particular scenario, whatever it might be. We encourage you to get a hold of us. You can email me directly, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com, or you can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and somebody will be back with you very shortly. All right, starting to wind down here, this next portion is called your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, with a member of the team, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider, that team member. These folks pay for advertising at Yourremedy. This would be a cost, an expense to that information provider, along with any other cost associated with your particular educational process or whatever services that you're interested in, whatever educational process that you're interested in. That brings us to an even more specific point. What is the refund policy at Yourremedy or the credit policy at Yourremedy? Well, there is none. If you were going to have that kind of a conversation, that would be a very strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider or team member's process or time. All right, lastly here, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce GW and give you a little segue of what we can expect for tonight.
All right, well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Do me a favor, Martin, when GW appears to interrupt me and
sure.
Then segue into GW at that time. So good to see you that you're on Skype. Thank you. Appreciate that. So this thing that I've been doing with Cora for the last couple of weeks, sharing my comments to questions regarding the so-called, quote, sovereign citizen, end quote, or the whatever you want to call them. And it's turned out well. I've got no negative feedback by email, text, or otherwise, and I've received a lot of very positive comments. So I'm going to be sharing this then tonight and tomorrow night as well when our brother John will be here. You'll want to hear that, that's for sure. And we'll go from there. So let's see what we got here. So we'll start with, can a private citizen be sued in federal court? Yes, is my answer, with two stipulations. They must have committed this crime on federal lands, see Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 for the locations of that land, and or they must be federal citizens, that is, have a residence, the states in perpetual union, and or agree to receive a Social Security number. And that was the end of that answer. What are some next is, I'll share this one. Was the American Constitution written in a language that is no longer spoken? I think I have some trolls on this place. And I wrote, it was written in English for the common man to understand then and the common man may understand today. You don't speak English. Next, what if someone paid a sovereign citizen to represent them in court? Amendment 6 of our federal constitution, circa 17. It says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusations, to be confronted with the witnesses, attempt to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. That was bold and underscore. The above all uppercase and italicized is to draw your attention to the fact that it does not say attorney or lawyer. You will find two things happen when you attempt to do to have a next friend stand with you at the bar. Next friend is a legal term, by the way. The judge won't let it happen. So what may you do about it? Well, you can sue the judge for deprivation of rights under color of law. That'll get his attention. This accomplishes two things. The judge must recuse himself or herself as they have been sued and no longer may have the appearance of non-bias. And the second thing is the incoming judge knows why he is coming into your case and will not even have to think twice about honoring his oath of office. We like to refer to this as tenderizing a court into good behavior. To understand more, read OnceWeWereColonists.com. You may be shocked. Next one is, what is a sovereign citizen in America? How common are they and how much of a threat are they to society? I wrote, read OnceWeWereColonists.com, and then you tell me the answer to your question. Are they a threat to society? They are a direct threat to democracy, which is a great thing, as we are a constitutional republic. What is a sovereign citizen? Has anyone ever been proven to be correct in their argument with law enforcement while using sovereign citizen ideology? I love it, ideology, like it's some religion. Chisholm versus Georgia, X. Rel., Supreme Court, United States, 2 U.S. 419, quote, to the Constitution of the United States, the term sovereign is totally unknown. There's but one place where it could have been used with propriety, but even in that place it would not, perhaps, have comported with the delicacy of those who ordained and established the Constitution. They might have announced themselves sovereign people of the United States, but serenely conscious of the fact they avoided this ostentatious declaration, end quote. Quote, as the state has claimed precedence of the people, so in the same inverted course of things, the government has often claimed precedence of the state. And to this perversion in the second degree, many of the volumes of confusion concerning sovereignty owe their existence, end quote. Sovereignty was defined, and those who are sovereign were identified by this case, and it is the standing law on sovereignty today. The Supreme Court, in Dred Scott versus John F. A. Sanford, 33. This is just before the Civil War, just 5 years before, no, not even 5 years before the Civil War, maybe four, where the High Court stated in relevant part, quote, the words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They're what we primarily call the sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. It is true. Every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens of the several states became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, meaning referencing naturalization, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded, end quote. You'll find further astonishing revelations within the Slaughterhouse cases, which is a 1873 U.S. Supreme Court decision at 83 U.S. 36, on a series of cases in which the court expressed its interpretation of the privileges not rights, privileges, and immunities clause of the 14th Amendment. The court interpreted this clause as protecting the rights of people that they have by virtue of their U.S. citizenship and not by virtue of their citizenship of a state. It is then defined the rights of U.S. citizens narrowly, excluding civil rights. The dissents and modern critics of this case say that this effectively rendered the clause meaningless. And then there's the legal tender cases, wherein lawsuits brought to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, involving the constitutionality of the Legal Tender Act of 1862. Wasn't that the year that we were in the midst of a Civil War, which was passed to meet currency during the Civil War of the federal government, i.e., the groups? The act had authorized the issue of $150 million in United States notes without any reserve or specie basis. The court had held that the Legal Tender Act violated the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution. So that was the answer to the question, what is a sovereign citizen? Has anyone ever been proven to be correct in their argument with law enforcement while using sovereign citizen ideology? I might add that you would never really get into any kind of banter back and forth with law enforcement on this matter. You're on the side of the road. He's got a gun or she's got a gun. She's got a radio. He's got a radio. And that's the worst place to negotiate or educate anything for anyone. Just be nice and we'll go from there. And, of course, the perfect example as to why that's so important happened two or three months ago, 4 months ago, whatever, in Wyoming or Utah, when the student of a David Strait, I think is who it was, that offers helping you correct your status, which is with insane writings, died with 46 bullet holes in him. Anyways, I've been notified that GW is here, so let us, without further ado, invite GW to the front, maybe share what's going on this week in his life and what any interesting tidbits he has from his students, and we'll go from there.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, very good job, Michael. And, yeah, I am here, and there's just been a whole volley of things going on all day, all night, early in the morning, with people getting their situations taken care of. All over the planet, and sometimes it's a little bit sleepless, but other than that, it's good. And of course, you know, this call is about, you know, the one main thing that it's about actually is learning how to correct your status with the U.S. State Department. And procuring a brand new passport and a brand new passport card in that process. And so, you know, we're always working with a lot of people to, help them get those things done and to understand really what it means. Because that's really the most important thing, is understanding who you are and who you're not and where you are and where you're not, jurisdictionally. On paper, and also how they have you categorized, and all those little tidbits of information and knowledge that over a period of time will become clearer and clearer and become a part of you as you learn it and just digest it. And the fact that you have God-given rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution, and that, and putting you in a position to, better, prevail in any kind of administrative or judicial matter when it comes to, law enforcement or, all the incredible number of agencies that are out there that want to regulate your life, when you have not damaged anybody, any person, any property, things like that. That's when it's most useful, of course. And also, it's a great thing enhanced travel benefit, so to speak. I hate to say benefit, but it's definitely something that people want to experience when they're, you know, going through airports and going through customs and things like this. Me and my team have been dealing with a bunch of different issues here that are right along these same avenues for people. And with that said, we can just, you know, open it up, you know, specifically for people that are wanting to understand more how it can affect them in their situation, in their life. And we'll just do that. If Martin is on the line, you can open up the phone lines and do your thing, Martin. And there is silence. Okay, so either Martin
I'm
is
here.
Not on the call.
Oh, I am here.
He's there.
Here, yes. Yes. We ready for questions and answers?
Sure.
All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. And let's get a quick refresh here. All right, well, don't be shy, folks. Let's get those questions in here. Go ahead and get them in early. Of course, I will gently remind everybody, for the folks that are maybe a little newer to the calls, GW here on the Monday night calls is probably, I don't want to say this, I don't want to just come out the wrong way, but it's probably one of the busier information providers that we have. So if we don't get those questions in early, we will be bidding him a good evening early. So let's get those hands up early. All right, Ed in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. I don't really have a question at the moment, but wanted to comment. I was listening to a show Mike Adams put out, Natural News, and he was interviewing Amy. No, not Amy. Ann Vanderstil. And she popped up with the state national thing and admitted to being a state national. And so I looked her up for a little bit, and she seemed good for the little bit that I've listened to her. And then I saw her, she credited a former congressman with telling her about the state nationals. American Nationals, and the guy actually sells a kit, la-di-da, and then a piece of her literature, she was giving credit to David Strait, and I said, well, dashed my good thoughts about her.
Yeah, and I like Ann.
Yeah,
and she does some amazing work, and she's really a good journalist and podcaster, and really waking up people. And I feel she's doing a lot of really good work. If you listen to her, and I have many times when she starts bringing up the subject, it's a funny thing because. She right before David Strait got arrested and his wife, of course, got put in prison, she was talking about it on her show one time, and she said the fact that she's on a special list that every time she goes through an airport, they just about strip her down, and they delay her, and they do all these different things. And I thought, huh, well, okay. That's not exactly the experience my people are getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little
bit
opposite.
I went and listened to that guy you brought up the other, well, maybe 2 weeks ago, where the guy's all loaded up with gutter English.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's quite good, too. But he's not where we're at either. He doesn't mention anybody else, and but he talks. He's all about all the commercial stuff that everybody has done since they put a lot of those people in prison, and they got nowhere with it. I'm thinking of one guy in particular that he put out DVD after DVD on commerce, and then he admitted about a year before they nailed him for, I think, writing bonds when he shouldn't have been or something or other. I forget what.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't ever do this stuff myself. It's just the openings in the law. And I'm like, well, I didn't buy any more DVDs.
Yeah, there's been guys like Sam Kennedy and all
kinds. Yeah, Sam Kennedy was one of the guys. But none of them had, like, a clear process of what appears to me to be freedom. I want to establish a trust as well, and I think I could see the use of either a foundation or the LLC. And I don't know that I need to, because if I structure my activities to not come into the types of income that a non-resident alien needs to pay taxes for, I should be okay with whatever I do. Am I not correct?
That's a good statement. Yeah, that's a good statement. And if you're well prepared and disposed to...
That's another story there.
Yeah. to use that information, you'll prevail. But that's why, of course, we've got... Pair Slavin on Wednesdays that help many, many, many people through the process of putting together their rightly, correctly written LLCs that really pass muster. So, there's definitely a number of ways to backstop your newfound status and standing besides just standing naked out there. I understand what you're saying. The thing that I will express and infer here on the call is that a lot of these people that are, plus the Sam Kennedys and some of the others, they mix, David Strait included, Anna von Wright. They mix so many and conflate so many topics, okay, such as the birth certificate and the your accounts that are hooked to the all caps name and the through the Social Security number and things like that. They mix and conflate so many issues at once that people just go on overload, and they might be a little baffled by the brilliance that they feel that's being explained to them, but they never, it seems like they never get a absolute just foundational grip on the fact of when they correct their status of what that is and what it's not. They have all these different issues. I got a minister that I'm taking care of in Georgia right now who's putting together all of her financial structure for the she already operates 501c3, but now she's moving very fast into 508 and Cheddar Religious Trust, and she's studying all this information and all this material from just countless different gurus out there. And finally I said her name and said, you know, you might want to stop that right now. You might just want to, with your busy schedule and everything else you're doing in your ministry, you might just want to just concentrate on knowing and understanding the instruments and the things that we're putting together. Plus she's going to, you know, she's got the she's got everything, you know, to get the national, that whole process done too. But it's like, well, let's just do one step at a time. She finally called me back and said, thank you so much for telling me to stop all that other stuff. I said, yeah? She says, yeah, I did. And she says, now I'm just concentrating on getting all this paperwork and this done. I'm like, well, praise the Lord. Because I mean, I've been sitting in this for, you know, a ton of years, over, you know, decades. And to me, yeah, it's relatively easy now. But for the person that just came into this and has to readjust their thinking on all these different levels, it's not that they're dumb. It's not that they're uneducated. It's not that they don't have the capacity. It's just that we only really have the capacity to really take in certain topics and issues and become, you know, to become really get to the point where you're consciously competent, you know, move from unconsciously incompetent to consciously, you know, unconsciously incompetent to consciously incompetent, okay, is a stretch. And then you get to the point where you're consciously competent, and that's where we want to at least get people. And that takes a little while. And then eventually, down the road, when you really understand it really well on that topic, you become unconsciously competent. You're just flowing in it. You have it down. It's just second nature to you. And you can't do that on a wide breadth of topics at once. Most people can't, okay? Unless they're just in a situation where they don't work, they can just study. They can, you know, they have all the bills paid, they have everything else done, and they can just get into all of the different topics and study them, and, you know, to their heart's content. That's very few people.
If I could just be conscious of my incompetence.
You're there. All right. Good.
Out of trouble. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, to raise your hand or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. I'm having a short call here if we don't get questions. And Mr. Edward, I see you're back. Could you help out maybe with that? You see the question there at Freedoms Radio from Karen?
Well, sure. Absolutely. I'm making sure I was unmuted. Karen writes in, Michael, can you please explain about Quora? What is the correct spelling and the website, please? Sure. All right, so it's Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, Q-U-O-R-A. And if you go to, if you type in this, https://, or you can just put in www.quora.com/profile, P-R-O-F-I-L-E, /Michael-Edward-2020. 20. It will take you to my page, and from there you can, if you elect, you can follow me and add to the people that follow me, and you'll see my replies when I've got something to say on some questions. So it's www.quora.com/profile/Michael-Edward-20, which is 20. Hope that answers your question. Martin, go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm actually. Nancy, raise your hand.
Okay. Let's see here. Nancy, yes. Nancy, go ahead. I've got you unmuted.
I hear various names for American National, American State National, State Citizen. Which one is the correct and legal one to use?
So I'll just tell you from my perspective and what I'm most comfortable using, even though there is a broadcast out there that I don't like to talk about too much, but it's providing a lot of things for a certain attorney that I work with. Okay, but and they put down on the broadcast, it kind of has, it says U.S. National, which I don't like, okay, at all. So of course it's never been changed, but and it, you know, it's out there floating around in the ionosphere, the webosphere. I like using, okay, just what David Strait, what a lot of these gurus that are leading people in a lot of wrong directions, what they use mostly is the term state national. Now, I don't, that's not wrong. It's just that they use it so much. But what's interesting is what they don't use is what I like to use, and I believe Michael Edwards likes to use, and John refers to it. Okay, Brother John. And that's because you find it at 8 U.S.C., or Title 8, at 1502 in the titles, in the code. It says American National. And so it states that. It doesn't say state citizen. It says American National. So I like using that term because it's something you can go to actually in the code where they actually recognize it. Now, you can also use the bare term national because it's actually found, and by the way, not the term non-citizen national, not, that's a construct. Okay, when you add non and then citizen and then national together, okay, that's another construct which has a totally different jurisdiction. But when you, just the term national is on the state, okay, the Secretary of State's website in their instructions, okay, very down there a little ways, and it uses the term national. My intent is to be a national and not a United States citizen. And that's exactly what it says on the website. So, using the term national is fine. Using the term American national is great. I like to stick with those two. Does that help you at all?
Okay, you like to stick with American national and what else?
And national.
Oh, American National and National.
Yeah.
Okay, and did you say Title 8, 1502?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we shouldn't use state citizen then.
I'm not, again, if you heard the words that I was saying, okay, listen to me carefully. I didn't say it was wrong. I said that David Strait and a lot of these other gurus, that's the term that they use all the time. But they don't use the term national, and they don't use the term American national.
So they use
I
the
want
term
to be very
state
clear
citizen.
About that. What's that?
Okay. So not state citizen. But, okay.
Again, I didn't say it was wrong. I just told you what I prefer.
Right, okay. Well, what about that W-8 Ben form where it gives you the choice of your status and it says Union State Citizen?
That's fine, too. That's great. Because that's hailing – when you say Union State Citizen, it's hailing back to a time of the de jure, okay, Union State Citizen. Which is commensurate with a national or an American national.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I got that.
All right.
All right.
Good
bye.
Deal. Okay. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Nancy. All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks.
I'd like to follow up with Nancy's comments. GW's comments. I am only focused on the law. I do not put feelings or anything else other than what the expression in the law says to the answer. Union state citizen is a phrase that was used in an old IRS form. However, it's not used in the United States Code that I could shepherdize anywhere. The only word I found, two words, is American national. That is the only phrase, and it's the only one that we should ever use, because if somebody wants to challenge us, we can come back and say, that's a good question. Take a trip to Title 8. Section 1502 of the United States Code, and tell me if that does not identify me as a man or a woman of one of the union of the freely associated compact states in perpetual union, or as the Articles of Confederation were titled, the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union. Tell me if that's not who I am. And let me ask you another question while you're at it, while I'm at it. When did the created, that is the United States, ever become equal to or greater than its creator, which are the Union States in perpetual union? When? Anyways, back to you, Martin.
All right. Looks like we've got a couple more questions pop up here. Very good. Let's start with Mike in Nevada. Go ahead, sir.
So that was Title 8, Section 1502?
No, O is 1502.
15.02.
Negative. 1502.
1502. Okay, 1502. I got it. All right, that's what I wanted to confirm. It's I've had a rough week here, moving my daughter, helping her get some of her stuff moved, and her going to court, and the judge telling her significant other that the court had to appoint him an attorney, but now that they've convicted him, he can be pro se, and it's just a mess with it. And then the judge says, well, the ship moved. And she didn't reply to that. And I said, well, that's an Admiralty Maritime term. So the ship docks, the ship moves. They're playing a game, but she keeps at them and keeps sending motions, and they can't answer them.
Well, what they're going to have to answer one day to is a deprivation of rights under color of law lawsuit. And
she went
to
the federal court. Let me break in. She went to the federal building to find out about filing a deprivation of rights. So she's going to file that against them. The judge, the prosecutor, and the so-called, what do they call that when they give you an attorney,
public defender, public pretender.
Yeah, this guy's a drug addict and a drunk, and he's going through a divorce proceeding, whatever, and he was already kicked off the bar one time, but because of his good behavior, they allowed him back in, and now he's selling people out right and left in the court. It's just an obvious sellout. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll still work at it.
Okay.
I just wanted to get that right on section 1502.
Yep.
I'll have her on that tomorrow. So it's been an interesting ride.
Oh, yeah.
And I was working at the same time at night, so. All right, that's all I have to say for tonight. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. All right, and so next up we've got Denise in Arizona. Go ahead, Denise.
Hi, good evening. I started this process, or what I thought was this process, years ago. And I remember them telling me I had to get copies of my birth certificate. And then from there, I was born in the District of Columbia. So I heard that was a whole nother animal because of what D.C. really is. And so I'm a little confused. They told me I got five copies of my birth certificate, but then once I got them, all of a sudden now I had the wrong form. I had the short form of the birth certificate, not the long form.
Yeah.
So is there a big difference in it? At that point, I assumed these people had no clue what they were really doing, and I just sort of dropped out of that whole group. So here I am now, 8-9 years later, and I'm sort of revisiting all that, and I'm sure it's God showing me. So can you clarify that?
GW, before you answer, can I tell a short story, please?
Sure.
All right. When the 13th Amendment came into play, prior to the 13th Amendment coming into play, there were only Union state citizens. When the federal government was going to prosecute a civil war between the North and the South, they first asked Robert E. Lee, "Would you prosecute the war for the South?" And his answer was, "I can't give you that answer until Virginia tells me which side she will fall to. And that is who I will support." In those days, everyone clearly understood that they were citizens of their own country / state, and that the priority was to serve your country, which was, for Robert E. Lee's purposes, Virginia, which is also the state, known as the state.
Right.
When the 13th Amendment came into play, that freed the African people who were prior to that cattle. They were farm animals on two legs. That's all they were, property. And at the 13th Amendment, they were freed from that servitude, that involuntary servitude. When the 14th Amendment came into play, it came into play for one purpose only, at least as far as the poster told us. There was, an ulterior purpose that was long-term and that has played out to today. But back then, it was for the sole purpose of giving a class of citizenship to a group of people who could not have constitutional rights by birth, as a birthright. Remember, this is the 1860s. It's well after the forming of our nation, the forming of our Constitution, et cetera. It's well after that. And they did not ever have the opportunity by birthright to become American nationals. So they were offered the protection, the further protection of the federal government, if they would consider and agree to become federal citizens. And that's what the 14th Amendment was about. It was to give this small group of people, a million or two, however they were, at that time, or even less. The classification of citizenship as a federal citizenship. They did not have constitutional rights. They had civil rights. Even as recently as the 1960s, Martin Luther King marched for civil rights. However, back at that time in the 1860s, Pennsylvania and New York, states in perpetual union, offered to these African people, who are Americans now, by the 14th Amendment, offered them state citizenship, where they would have enjoyed constitutional rights, fearing the prejudices of the Americans of European descent. They chose to suckle with the federal government for the federal government's protections. Now, keeping that in mind, I'm inviting GW now to step in and give his answer to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Denise. So your question, and to stay on point with your question, all right, was that you said that, you know, you had started this process, you know, many years ago, and the people that were you leading it through were trying to get you to get, you know, the right kind of birth certificate, so that it could be authorized, okay? And,
correct.
Yes. So let me tell you this. This is a prime example. Thank you for saying this, and thank you for asking about it. This is the prime example of the gurus out there that are conflating issues that don't need to be conflated and don't have anything to do with correcting your status at the highest department of the land, which is the U.S. State Department, okay, to correct your status. You don't need any type of special birth certificate, okay? You just need the standard thing that you can order from your state, okay? That will pass muster, and it's only, well, let me tell you something, it's only for identification purposes. It has nothing to do with whether your status is going to be corrected, okay, whether you go through the machinations of getting it authorized and sending it through and getting it. I mean, there's a number of different things that different people do, okay, for different processes that are not correcting your status with the U.S. State Department, but correcting your status is in the form of trying to become, and I'll give you one example, trying to become a secured party creditor. That's a totally, completely different whole process that I wouldn't even be trying to venture both at once, because that one's a pretty complicated and it's a lot of paperwork. And I know some people are going right through it right now. The doctor and his wife, she's a pilot. They're both very academically sound, okay? And they're having a lot of hard time with it, okay? So here's the thing. What we just try to stay on track with the process that works, which is, you know, you don't need all that, okay? Whatever birth certificate you ordered will be fine for this process, okay? And it will be used only as another form of identification if you haven't, like, for instance, if you haven't had a passport, okay, in recent, what's that?
I do have a passport.
Okay, is it current?
Yes, 5 more years left to go.
Okay, so here's the thing. You're not going to even need the passport. I mean, excuse me, you're not going to need the birth certificate in the process. Although we do say, okay, just to clarify, we do say, hey, just for craps and giggles, so that if they happen at some point to ask you, when you're standing there with the administrator, okay, that's taking you through this process at the State Department, if you're standing there with them and they ask for the birth certificate, hey, you got it right there. You got it in your folder, okay? Not a big deal, all right?
Right.
But most of the time, if you have a current passport, most of the time they don't even ask, because the current passport actually acts as one form of ID. And the only other, they'll ask you for one other form, like a driver's license, okay? And most everybody has that, you know, that they carry with themselves. And so those two things, you know, pass muster every time, and we get people through the process. And so it's this process is a lot easier than the David Straits and the other gurus out there trying to get people to jump through hoops and file stuff at the court and file stuff at the county and then do this and that. I mean, it's just, it's crazy, some of the stuff that they're having people do. This process,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying this process is a lot simpler.
Okay.
And it gets the job done.
Is D.C., being born in D.C., is there something different with that? I grew up in Maryland. Born in D.C.,
okay.
Grew up in Maryland. Maryland annexed
the
land to D.C. and all that stuff. So is there a big difference with that?
I'll tell you, for this process, for getting your getting a corrected passport and passport card, okay, not a problem at all.
Okay. Okay.
Not a problem at all.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rather get the status corrected, get an American national passport. I've read some of that with the U.S. Is it USCC codes something? I have a book on that, and I haven't even looked at it for years. But I think that was wasn't it U.S. Code 10 and then the 81502, Section 81502? Isn't that what you said?
No. It was Article, well, not even Article, I'm sorry. It's 8, Title 8 or 8 U.S.C., and the section is 1502.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying the number 8, not the letter A, alpha.
Right, the number 8.
Okay. Okay, so 8 USC and then section 1502. Is that right?
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
All right. I'm going to pull that book out now. I'm excited again.
All right.
All right. I think that's
good
it for
deal.
Me. Yeah.
Okay, Denise.
Yeah, so where do you go from there trying to get the national passport then? You have to turn
okay,
in your
so what you need to do is, you know, you'll reach out to Michael Edwards, okay, on his 1-800 number or whatever, or if you have his private details, you can reach straight out to him, and he would, he'd process you and start the process. So the process looks something like that. You would pay, get the process started. They would work and help you with getting the DS-11 all filled out correctly, because it has to be done in a very correct way. All right. And then with that, you would also be doing an affidavit. Okay. And the affidavit would be filled out in a certain way, notarized, and then we use those instruments together, okay, and you'll be given instructions and everything else. And then there'll be another process where you'll actually get your appointment, okay, with the U.S. State Department for a fast passport application, which will mean that you'll have to actually jump through another hoop, which is actually you're going to be flying out of the country. But not to worry, because we have got a couple websites you can go to. Once you make that appointment, you have to tell them basically during the appointment that you've got a trip to fly out of the country. It's less than 14 days away. Okay? And so that's the only thing that allows you to go into a U.S. State Department to get a fast passport. And that's
now,
a passport.
Now, why can't you go to a passport? There's a passport office in Tucson, Arizona. Why can't I just drive down there and get it?
You can. You can, but they only take you – but listen to me carefully. Got people going through that – I have people flying in to go to that particular Western, it's called the Western Passport Center. Okay.
Okay.
And they fly in from different states, actually, because they get better treatment there, faster treatment there. Okay. A lot of them are booked up in Tucson. So listen to me carefully. Listen to me carefully.
All right.
The only way you're going to get in there and get an appointment is if you have kind of an urgent situation. Okay, and to qualify for that urgent situation is the fact that you are, okay, flying out of the country. You have a ticket to fly out of the country, and it's less than 14 days away.
Right.
So what we have our people do is get the appointment, okay, see the earliest appointment they can get in the day at that particular facility, if that's the one you're going to use, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And once they get it, then they get online, and it only costs $15 or so, or $12 or $15,
mm-hmm.
to book a ticket that looks like a regular ticket, okay, to fly out of the country. And then they say you're going to Mexico or you're going across the pond, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay. And then you have that for the next day. All right. And the reason why I stress this is because if you don't, if you have it for many days out, they might just say, hey, listen, we're going to have you come back 72 hours from now to get your passport and your passport card. You don't want them to do that. You want to get it all done while you're there. Okay.
Right.
And so that's why we have people book the actual, let's not call it a fake ticket, but it actually passes muster. Okay. People use this for all different kinds of processes. A lot of people use this to get a visa. That's the main thing people use it for, is to get a visa, because it's a strain trying to get a visa, and there's a little more urgency to get a visa when you have a trip, okay, flying out of the country. And so people often use it to get that visa, and it's just a throwaway, okay? And then they can go back and plan their trip. They know they got the visa now. Now I can go and plan the trip and, you know, to the destination and everything else. So that's the process we use, and that's what's been working like gangbusters, all right?
Okay. And it has to be within 14 days you make this ticket? Or regulation?
Actually, what I just told you is that the only thing that qualifies you to go into that place is the fact that you have a flight that's going out of the country in less than 14 days.
Right.
See, that's what you have to tell them. They won't ask you for the ticket at that time. Only after you get the appointment on the phone and get it scheduled, then you go on and get a ticket, but you get it for the very next day. From your appointment. You get it from the very next day. Your appointment's on the 2nd, you get it for the 3rd. And that gives them no escape clause whatsoever. It's now very urgent. You got that ticket for the very next day. They got to get it to you in 3 hours. You understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do. But don't they question why you waited so long?
No.
Okay.
Never had anybody question why they waited so long.
All right.
No. No.
Okay. Very good.
Yep.
All right. So go ahead.
Well, these are just little passport hacks, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
I've been to that office before, so, yeah.
I've been there many, many times.
Yeah. So, okay, well, very good. Thank you so much for the info. That helped clear up some stuff.
Okay.
I'll keep listening, and I'll contact Michael.
The reason that I told the story in conjunction to what GW then shared with you is because remember I said Pennsylvania and New York invited these former slaves, now freed, and as 14th Amendment federal citizens, they invited them to become state citizens.
Right.
So too, you were invited to be a state citizen in Maryland without any fixed expression, but the fact that you lived there and were reared there all your life, you're a Marylander.
Yeah.
And if you've lived the last, I think it's 7 years, wherever you are today in that state, then you're that state citizen.
Arizona.
Arizonian.
Yeah.
Where you go on vacation and leave on probation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I want to go back to Tennessee. I want to go back to the East Coast. Yeah.
To the green grass of home.
Exactly. I'm tired of dirt and rocks and dust storms.
That's a coincidence there. I was just talking about Tom Jones earlier today. That's funny. All right. Does that take care of you, Miss D?
All right. Thank you so much once again.
My pleasure, Denise.
All right. Next up, we've got Charlie in Oklahoma. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. If a person has, I don't know if you would call it SPC status, would that sort of person want to change the status that is the process that you're helping with, DW?
Sure. Let me answer that. Okay, so the SPC process, and folks that don't know what that means secure party creditor, okay, and having the status of a national or American national, okay, are two totally different things. They dovetail together, but they don't inhibit you from doing either one or using both. But the thing is, with the secured party creditor status, the reason people do that, the sole purpose really of becoming a secured party creditor is so that you can discharge debt, existing debt that you owe in that all caps name. Okay, so that's why people do it, and it's usually people that are more positioned, they're more positioned in being kind of a desperate situation, I find. Okay, all the people that I've ever worked with, they're more in a position, they got a big tax bill, okay, that they want to discharge. They have credit cards they want to discharge. They have school loans they want to discharge. And, of course, getting a corrected passport card's got nothing to do with that whatsoever. Okay, so when you correct your stat, this is why I don't like conflating all these issues. That's why these gurus that can conflate all these issues together really do a disservice, because there's really, when you do the secured party creditor and you get through all that process, you're now in a position to be able to more readily discharge debt. Is this coming through clear as I speak?
Yes. Let's see. Am I muted? Let's see. I'm not. Yes, it is. Thank you.
Not me. Okay, good. Good. They're two totally different purposes for totally different process for two totally different purposes. I just want to make that clear. All right.
Yeah. And to try and verbalize, I guess, the purpose of being an American national, I would it be fair to say to really establish my birthright?
And put yourself into a category where they're more apt to recognize the fact that you have all your God-given rights.
Gotcha. Perfect. Thank you for that clarification. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. And then, by the by, Kent, I do see you there, Bob. Real quick, Nancy, did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, real quick, where do you get the fake ticket for $15? Where do you get that from?
There's two different websites that will give you, once you sign up and you engage with Michael, two different websites that you'll be able to access. Yep.
Oh, I see. Okay. So at that time. Yeah, I well, I
time,
just want, I'm trying to get my ducks in a row and prepared for this. So anyway, so, okay, we can get it later from him. All right. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, we can't give away all of our hacks. Just a lifetime anyway, go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off there, GW. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
And Mike, did you have a follow up as well?
Yes, for Brad. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Discharged debts, doesn't that fall under Bankruptcy Act of 1933? All bills are prepaid.
Yeah, you got it.
House Joint Resolution 192. The Internal Revenue has documents that you have to fill out accordingly. They have to be filled out properly. You send them to them, and they send them to the Treasury, and then they will discharge the debt because they have no choice. By law, they have to. It was written into the bill. Am I correct?
You got it. You got
but
it. That's part of the whole
process.
It's a process.
It's a real process.
Yep.
And it's not for the weak or timid. But anyway, it's a learning process. The whole thing's a learning process because they never taught anybody anything about any of this in school because the schools are not designed to teach anything other than for you to stand at a press or whatever you're doing 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and we'll let you have Sunday off to recoup.
Yeah. I'm not even getting Sundays off right now.
Well, I work
I'm not
nice
complaining.
I'm
not complaining.
Day,
so. I'm not complaining. Yeah. I'm
used to doing research work at night, so that's. Mm-hmm. I did that for several years. Anyway, people don't understand how compartmentalized, indoctrinated, and dumbed down they have made the entire country. And just ask any high school, college kid today, and they'll all tell you, well, everybody's supposed to pay taxes. But not one of them have read not one page of the tax code. My nephew's son made that statement to him, and then I asked him, I said, well, have you read that in the tax code anywhere? And he couldn't answer the question. They've indoctrinated them thoroughly. And now then they're going to come back with the mask thing again. We're going to have another COVID or some sort of Bill Gates, Fauci disease, and they're going to be taking people's temperatures going into the store and out of the store, and that's how they're going to run the next little gig they got. You can't
that's
go
their
in the
plan,
store and buy
but hopefully that's their plan. That's for sure. They're forecasting that, but hopefully, most people by now have waken up and say, and they're going to say, nah. Nah, we tried that before. That's all it'll take.
You got 5,000 people walking into the store telling them, no, we're not abiding by your foolishness. You know, that's a little different. But I have my doubts about most of them. They need a leader, and none of them are leaders. They're not even followers. They're like sheep. You know, you start barking, they all scatter in different directions until they hear the sheep herder's voice. When he calls, they'll all gather around.
Yeah.
Anyway, for those that want to know, they keep researching, reading, and listening. But
yep.
And then there's others, they just want everything handed to them and then they don't know what to do with it after you hand it to them. So that's where America's at today, Dad.
All right. Does that take care of you, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Appreciate you. All right.
All right. We're going to be winding down here pretty shortly here, folks. So any other last-minute questions, star 2 on your keypad, raise your hand, or type it on the Freedoms Radio side. Kent, you've been unmuted, sir.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Can hear you.
Okay. Three things. Since Michael was just on the line, I'd like to know whether or not with his daughter in the case that he just mentioned, whether or not based on the conversation that we had about 3 weeks ago, thereabouts, he was able to use FARA at all in that what he was working with those court cases. That would be my first thing since he's on the line.
You're unmuted, Mike.
Oh, okay. Thank you. No, we didn't get to that point yet.
Okay.
She's been so bound with trying to do this and research all the statutes and codes that mostly the statutes they're using. But the judge, I try to get her to get on the call, but she's preparing for a hurricane right now because she's in Tampa. So anyway, if there's any way we could get together and discuss that with her, because she has been reading all of the books that she's gotten from Mike and other materials, law material. Got some from Peter Graves and How to Win in Court. And so she's been reading and researching and studying, but the court is definitely against you if you're pro se. They're definitely against you if you're pro se. In fact, they had all the bailiffs coming into the court because they were all snickering and making jokes about the guy's going to be pro se, and it's disgusting is what it is. They need to all be brought up on charges of deprivation of rights.
Yeah, the problem
to commit
is
deprivation and let Judge Roy Bean loose on them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Here, we're talking right now about pro se, and I'm going to just for a minute or so, I'm going to bring on my local legal expert here. Okay, we're talking about pro se there, Evan. Okay, so I'm
on speaker. So this guy's he was just talking about Michael was just talking about pro se. Another not Michael Evans, just talking about pro se. Tell him what that means in court.
Right. Pro se in a court setting, or even on your paperwork when you bring it in, is an expression that you are representing, you are representing yourself, right? And if you are represented in court, you are considered incompetent. Okay, so that's the bottom line of the pro se.
So what's the proper term that they want to come in as?
You want to qualify the term is in propria persona. And the persona that you want to qualify is that you are an American national, a living soul with unalienable God-given rights pursuant to the original Constitution.
No. Who's talking?
Okay, that's my legal expert, Michael, that wins cases all the time. But what he does is he helps people through the process.
Oh, you've got somebody with you on the phone there.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I'm sitting here trying to say Kent's voice has changed. okay, I'm sorry. No,
yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. I'll go back to my video here I'm looking at.
But anyway, the term in propria persona is a term you want to become familiar with and understand. So
what about sui juris?
Sui juris.
Well, the sui juris delineation has some compromising elements in it.
And I have to look at the when we've gone through it, the strongest position to be in is in propria persona with the qualification of your God-given unalienable rights. I believe the sui juris still puts you in a statutory setting.
Okay, I need to really have you school me on that when you have time. And with GW's permission and with your permission, because I have a different flip on that, and I would rather eat humble pie and be wrong and correct myself than to not.
Oh, likewise. If there's an aspect in it that I've missed, I want to know what the truth is. I don't want to be, spouting off erroneous information, but.
Sui juris, as a Latin quote, is standing in your own right. In your own right is what it is. And that's why I took that. I did not have any understanding of it having a nexus to anything other than a American national. So I really would love to have a conversation with you on that when you have the time and are willing.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
I'll coordinate that. All right.
Okay, I want John to be on that call, too.
All right.
All right. Yep. That looks to be...
am I back on now?
What's that?
Am I back on now?
Yes.
Kent wasn't through.
Yeah. I wasn't through.
Go ahead, Ken.
Remember, I opened my conversation with "Can you hear me?" and then I said I have three issues.
Yeah, no.
So we didn't get past the first one. Awesome. So in response to what Michael was, in response to what Michael from Florida, Las Vegas was saying regarding his daughter, if Emily wants to discuss that further, then we should get Ernie involved in that telephone call, and maybe you want to arrange that through Mike or have Mike arrange something. Okay, I'm talking about Michael Edwards.
Yeah.
Is that satisfactory?
Satisfactory to me.
Okay. So my second thought is, I think it was last Tuesday's call with John, but I'm not sure. It might have been Monday. Brett from California was on the call, and he was talking about someone who had overcome the Social Security number issue on some documents, I believe. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that's what he was saying. And that, but he did not use the religious argument, and I'm familiar with the religious argument, have used that, and I presume most of the time when people think of another argument, they're thinking of Title V, 552A, which I've also used, unfortunately, unsuccessfully sometimes. So I'm interested in hearing from this other gentleman or from Brett relaying the information as to what the argument was. So if Brett's on the line, I'd be interested in hearing that, and I could understand how that might apply to filling out a form such as a DS-11. If he's not on the line, then maybe we should take that up on tomorrow night.
Do you want to, I guess, respond to that, GW?
Yeah.
Okay, so what did he say again? I was getting back on my headphones, and I... Not
okay, so there's a gentleman. There's a gentleman in California, I believe his name is Brett, that came on the line and said that he was dealing with someone who had used, who did not choose to use a religious argument to overcome the provision with a lot of these government forms that they want a Social Security number, and he had some type of other argument he used. Now, I'm presuming, although he didn't say this, I'm presuming it's something different than the Title V, Section 552A argument. Statutory regarding non-use of the Social Security number. So I'd be interested in hearing what that argument is in lieu of using a religious argument, which may be more likely to be successful than a 552A argument. So I don't know if that's on the call or not.
Yeah, that's out of my ballpark, so it's going to have to be the guy you're talking about. I don't even want to comment.
So should we? So Martin, should we hold that till tomorrow night, or is Brett on the line tonight, or not? Or
Yeah, let's just hold off on that, and we'll involve Mr. Edward. Maybe I'll send him a little poke after the call and tell him to. We'll figure it out.
Okay, good enough. And the third issue is, Greg, John was talking about this, but he didn't talk about it at any length or give us a list or anything. He was talking about last week how people need to understand that your process is just one process of numerous processes that people may want to go through depending on their individual circumstances, and that this status correction is sometimes being misinterpreted as sort of like the be-all, end-all, well, I did that, and I don't need to do anything else. So would you be kind enough to, now I realize we can't cover everybody's, you know, particular facts as to where they may be in life, like you were talking about the doctor and his pilot wife, et cetera, but what other, for most people that have been involved in the system to a certain point in their lives, kind of across the board in that system, not knowing that they should declare that they were state citizens or American nationals. What other processes do you see as adjuncts to what you are doing that you think are relatively important without getting into specifics that may just be in very, very limited circumstances?
Yeah. You know, there's only really two processes, and then John, okay, can talk to you about a third, okay, and it's not easy, and it's what John does for some people is not easy, and it's not inexpensive, okay, to get done, but he I don't want to give away too much, but he can, you know, there's some people with special needs, and they would be. Sometimes people that have been in certain agencies, worked for uncle, and have a need to be separated from that Social Security number for different various reasons, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tracking, anonymity, whatever, okay? I'm not in that situation where I ever need or want to do that, thank God, because a lot of those people that work for uncle have various organizations and nations and things like that want to kill them, okay? So if you're so disposed and you're on this call, that's something you might want to reach out and talk with Brother John in a very private way. But the other two, okay, that I know of and think are really the only thing that, you know, that I would ever be doing if I was so disposed to do. I don't have, and I have not been in the credit world for a long time. I have paid cash for everything, even mortgages, okay? So, but I realize I'm an odd fellow, okay, and that most people, even people that are, you know, waking up and got it right, you know, there's a bunch of extra baggage sometimes that they're carrying. You know, they've done dumb things and or let things go, and you know, it's still tracking them, and they have these bills, and so whereas skipping over to the national thing is more about, you know, the ease of mobility, okay? I forget what the gentleman's name was that wrote the Blackstone's commentaries, and you could sum it all into one thing, and that basically is being able to move around unmolested is like the ultimate freedom, okay? And so the national status and getting the corrected passport and everything is kind of more in the line of that, all right? Whereas the SPC, the Secured Party Creditor process, would more be set towards people that have some outstanding problems financially with debt, that they don't see a way out. They don't see the ability to recover. You know, they don't have the quite have the capacity to, you know, make a lot of money to pay these things off. So, hey, is there any other way? Now, those are the people usually that gravitate towards that arena and start getting status up in that, on that side, to be able to utilize the you know, we talked about this earlier. Michael, you know, was talking about how they dumb us down and keep us compartmentalized and everything else. Very, very true. That's their plan. Okay, that's the overall plan of the deep state globalist regime, is to keep you in a state of a perpetual angst and couple jobs just to make ends meet and things like that. So you never become a threat. You never have enough time to really protest and make change. And they've been relatively successful with that. But those are the only two areas that I would say, you know, one side's on the becoming a national, and the other side is doing the process to be able to discharge debt. Okay? That's the way I see it.
So when you say there were two additional processes that you would use, you're looking at the American National and the DS-11 as one of those two processes, and then the second one being the secured party creditor issue, and then the third one being what John is more capable of talking about, if you will.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that explanation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. I think that is going to take care of us. Did you have anything else, Mike?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
All right. Let me get just a quick peek. GW over here on the Freedoms Radio side. Make sure we didn't miss anybody there. No, we are all set. Thank you so much. Great call. Great call tonight.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so I guess we will see this week. Do you have any closing comments for us, GW?
You know, good call. There was some lively conversation, and hopefully people here have learned a little more and you know, a little more disposed to knowing what they truly want to achieve. Just in closing, it's from my vantage point, it's always been kind of hearing whoever it is, hearing them out, hearing their heart, and finding out what they, particularly, what do they want to achieve? And so those are the questions that I always ask my private clients. You know, it's you know, they want me a lot of times to, you know, and I'm finding this more and more as I'm more and more in demand, is that I'm getting away from telling them all about the wonderful things that are, you know, that we can do for them, and really asking them just point blank, what is it that you want to achieve? What are your goals? What do you want to do? Okay, because then we can plan a great strategy to get that done. So, with that said, thank you for coming on the call, everybody, and wish you well, and have a good night's sleep.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, folks, that's going to conclude us for the Monday night call here. Join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be having our Tuesday night call with Brother John, the litigation, the point of the spear for the team. And so you won't want to miss that. Then Wednesday, how to operate commercial business through the LLCs, Mr. Slevin, Mayor Slevin. We're talking about the Golden Horseshoe. And then Thursday for home foreclosures again. So
Mr. Edward, do you have anything else for us in closing?
No, Martin, I do not. I want to thank you so very much for doing a terrific job tonight. I want to thank GW and for his guest, and maybe sometime if his guest is open and willing, they could make a presentation together on the Monday night call if he's so interested. Certainly I'm fascinated to hear more of what he has to say. So with that having been said, I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. See you tomorrow night with Brother John. Until then, be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.